Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We have Elijah Campbell hitting the switches. Elijah, remember how we used to start it with the wind up? Here we go. I was reading the reviews, and someone said, it's great content, and I love listening to it, but I just can't stand here we go.
What?
I just started cracking up. But hey, you know what?
That's energy, man. That's energy. That's bringing energy.
We didn't switch it up for that person, but hey, I hope you are still listening because we don't do it anymore. We just wanted to do something different. But hey, man, we have an awesome show this week. As always, we're going to get into some of the fan perspectives and some of the things that the fans can look forward to at Titans games and just what possible changes there could be with the stadium. We got Gil Beverly coming on, who is he was brought aboard to help just basically bridge the gap between the fans and the team, and he's starting to do an excellent job with that. So we'll have him on. We got Emory Hunt, football game plan, talking a little shop. We want to get into the draft. You know, that's his wheelhouse. So we're going to get into that. And then I wanted to get into a little bit of Dylan Raidens, and you delivered. We got Vanderbilt offensive line coach A.J. Blazek. Now, why would we have him on? Well, he was Raidens' offensive line coach there at North Dakota State. So Elijah used the phone a friend feature, and that's what it is. But before we get to all that, I think it's time for the music. Let me get that, please. You know where we are. All right, that music comes on. And when you hear that music, the next voice that you know that you will hear is that of Craig Hodges, for 3-3.
What's up, man? You doing all right, man?
Hey, man, I'm doing awesome, man. Chris Sanders on the board. I appreciate you, man.
Man, always. You know, I always look forward to coming on the show, man, because you know, it's unexpected of what we're going to say. We might say, throw in a towel.
Yeah.
We just don't know. We don't know. And that's why I love coming on the show. I love your expertise. I love your energy. But, man, I just love everything about the show, big dude.
That's right. So,
yes,
I think, you know, the best thing to do, obviously, in this situation, because when you think of the Titans right now, like the only thing that's right in the news right now is Julio Jones. And AJ, you got AJ Brown, you know, lobbying. You got Derrick Henry lobbying. You got Taylor Lewan, Kevin Byard pushing AJ Brown. Like, it's a big group that wants to get number 11, Julio Jones, to start wearing number 8 with the Titans. So we need to get into that. What is your take on this? Is Julio Jones the guy the Titans need to absolutely go out and get?
You know, it's so funny. Listen, I love the player. I love Julio Jones. I love what he brings to the table. And I think sometimes we get caught up in the name, which is a great name, probably one of the best receivers to ever play the game. But then you start looking at the Tennessee Titans. Is he a good fit? I mean, it's not that he's not a good player. It's not that he can't make plays. But what happens if you have Henry running, toting the ball a whole bunch, and you have A.J. Brown catching the ball? How is he going to be a factor, and how is he going to act if he's just blocking? So it's more than just getting a guy with a big name. It's about getting a guy that's a good fit for your scheme. Because if you look at the Tennessee Titans, they're not a pass-first team. They're a run-first team. So what if that happens if Julio comes in here and he gets one or two targets a game? What is he going to do?
And that's the thing that really stands out to me. Because how will that work, right? Julio Jones is a guy who pretty much, with the exception of maybe 2 or 3 years, has gotten 10 targets per game. So is he going to get that with the Titans? I don't think so. But my question along with yours is, okay, well, let's say he gets the amount of targets that Corey Davis got. Okay. How is he going to – Is he, I mean, obviously he's a better receiver than Corey Davis. We're not going to
debate
that. But how is he going to operate within those targets, right? So you look, 2020, Corey Davis got 97 targets in 14 right. games. You know, so I want to see what Corey what Julio Jones would do with those 92 targets.
Right. Right. Well, then on the flip side, TD – we forget about a couple of cats that they brought in. You got Dez Fitzpatrick. You have Reynolds that came from the Rams. So what are they saying? You know what I'm saying? How are they responding? I mean, you have a locker room right now that's a pretty good locker room right now. But then when you having, this is just me, when you having your players that's inside camp lobbying for another guy to come in, how does that make you feel? You know, how does that make you feel? Okay, I'm here. You drafted me. You brought me from the Rams, but then you're lobbying for somebody else to come in. I know you want to make your team better, and this will make the Tennessee Titans team better, but you still want to keep that chemistry. You still want to keep guys happy in the locker room, because if you have A.J. Brown and Julio catching a lot of passes, then all of a sudden Josh Reynolds and Dez Patrick are not catching any balls. Are they going to be team players? That's all that I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about what Julio can do on the field. I'm concerned, is he just a good fit for the Tennessee Titans club?
Right, and that's really what I want to see. And, I mean, one of the things that John Robinson said when he talked about Josh Reynolds, when he talked about Dez Fitzpatrick, he brought up the blocking aspect, and he said that's something that they fully ask receivers to do, because when running backs have to step up and pass pro, they're sacrificing themselves, and just the same, the receivers have to do it. So I think there's a back and forth that can be made. At the end of the day, though, it's kind of tough for me to say no to a guy like Julio Jones coming to the team. So let's look at it this way. What, in your opinion, would be the benefits of having a guy like that in this program?
Oh, he's going to scare a lot of defenses. I mean, and it's going to make everybody around you better. He's going to make Henry better. He's going to make A.J. Brown better. It's because why? They're going to put a lot of tension on Julio Jones, because he's a game changer. He's a guy who can make plays. He's a guy that just scares defenses. And when you have another guy like Julio Jones, and then you have A.J. Brown, you have Henry, you just made your team absolutely better with him just being on the field. I mean, even if he goes out there and he catches one ball a game, and I'm not saying he's not going to do that, if he just catches one ball a game, he still opposes a threat that he can make that big play. And that's why I think that it could be beneficial. But I still think that I just don't think it's a good fit, because you just don't really need him at this point.
That's my thing. On the opposite side of A.J. Brown, because you know what's going with this group right now, you know what's going to happen. He's going to get the best corner from the opposing team and help over top probably. So that's going to be a tough thing, and that's really what it comes down to. Can Josh Reynolds dominate that one-on-one coverage that he's going to face? Well, I'll say this. Julio Jones will, and there's no question.
Doubt, no doubt.
And I think that's where the positive is. I do like, and maybe you could touch on this, because you have some of the vets there kind of, pull you along. I do like the fact that you're having a guy – that has been there and done that for multiple years at the top of the game in the building, helping these guys understand what it takes to be not only a pro, but an elite pro. So maybe you could speak to that a little bit with, Haywood Jeffries, I would imagine, was a guy that you had the benefit from.
Actually, it was Webster Slaughter before he got cut.
Okay.
And I'm going to be real honest with you. That's the best route runner I've ever seen in my life. I've seen Jerry Rice run some routes, but I've never seen anybody run routes like Webster Slaughter. And Webster Slaughter helped me how to run routes, how to, do things at the top of the route, and how to do releases. So you do have a Julio Jones come in. But does he want to play that role? See, I can't really comment on that, because at the end of the day, Julio Jones is upset because they're not winning. Does he want to come into the Tennessee Titans organization and say, you know what, if I'm going to be a team, if I want to see this team win, then – I'm going to have to do some things that I may not want to do. And do I want to teach these young guys? Do I want to be a leader to these guys? Or do I just want to catch footballs? Because the reason why he's coming, want to go to different teams, is because they haven't been winning. So now you have the Tennessee Titans. What if they start off slow? Is he going to have the same attitude of wanting to teach the guys and be a team player, or is he going to say, I want to out of here because I'm not getting any passes? So those are the pros and cons of what's going on. I don't really know the guy, but I'm just thinking, man, if you just keep these guys that you have right now and build off what you have, I don't think you need Julio Jones. That's just my opinion. I may be wrong. I'm not saying it. But in my opinion, I just think that go with what you have right now and see if it works.
It's an interesting point you make, because I do know – that he was definitely a guiding force for Calvin Ridley. And that's something that I definitely will give him credit for. But, yeah, it's just there's so many variables. The health issue,
yeah, it is.
I think. And then you look at next year and the following year, you know, you got numbers of $11.3 million in each of those years.
Right.
At the same time, you got contracts that the Titans are going to have to look at. I mean, what happens if Josh Reynolds does well? Then you got to look at signing him. Right. AJ Brown after next year is going to be a guy that could hit the market. After next year, because that'll be his fourth year. So there's a lot that Jeffrey Simmons. There's a lot that this team has to really think about.
Yeah.
And it's just all the more reason why I'm glad I'm not someone up there making those decisions.
Yeah, but then on the flip side, away from that, let's just talk about formations. Okay, say we go 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, three wide receivers. Who's going to be in the slot? So we get caught up in all the names, which is a great name, but where are you going to put Julio Jones at? Where are you going to put A.J. Brown? Are you going to put Josh Reynolds in the slot, who really hasn't played the slot? So it's so many variables that goes into this, TD. I understand it. The name is great. The playmaker's great. The player's outstanding. But you got to make sure that it's a great fit, and that's kind of what I'm talking about.
Right, no doubt. I think, honestly, they want to put Des Fitzpatrick there in the slot. I think they want to use him in the same type of stylistic manner that the Saints use Michael Thomas.
Yeah, and, but he's got to have some wiggle. Michael Thomas got some wiggle.
Right, right. And that's the thing, as you mentioned, at the top of the route, getting the separation. But that's what I see them attempting to use him with. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, this slot position, that's something I've been on record like, hey, man, this team has to figure that out. And I don't know what they're going to do. It's all going to be interesting. And we'll know in the coming days, right? June 1st comes. That's when the stuff hits the fan, man.
Shoot, I might come out of retirement for like 5 minutes.
5 minutes? Sign a deal?
5 minutes. To go cash a check and then I'm retired.
You gonna go to Racy McMath and be like, look at me. I'm 81 now.
Hey, give me that jersey, man. Hey, I want to talk to that dude. He's got my jersey, man. He got to represent with the quickness, man.
Yeah, we're going to have to connect you guys, man.
I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah, love for sure. So, well, hey, man, another week, another segment in. And you were just blessed with the voice of none other than Sidell 333.
Oh, man, I'm going to call you Lionel from the Jeffersons, man.
Yo, man,
I appreciate you, man. Love being on the show, man.
Much pleasure, man. Appreciate you. We'll holler.
I appreciate you, Doc. All right.
Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to freedomtireguys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call, and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at freedomtireguys.com.
This is Kayla Farley. I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break. This segment brought to you by Orange Juice Jones. Talking with TD. Man, I had to play this music because this is just like, this is from the group chat, you know what I'm saying? And the group chat includes my guy who's coming on right now, Emory Hunt, football game plan, Silly Rabbit.
Listen, man, I wasn't expecting that intro. That's one of the classic songs and videos of all time.
I just hear the beat and I just think about how he was sitting there in the cafe. watching this girl walk by with another dude, and he had the cigarette in his hand, and just the way he fiddled with it just had me dying, man.
Like, I can't believe this with his little cigarette and his little Tabassier. Yeah.
Classic OG type stuff, man. That's hilarious. But, yo, man, I wanted to bring you on, obviously, because you're the one I trust the most when it comes to getting knowledge about these guys. So I want to just kind of touch on a few guys with the Titans draft. I know that you watch a lot of FCS football. So let's start with Dylan Radins and just some of the things that he brings to the table. Do you think he's a guy that could come in and contribute immediately as a starter?
Absolutely. I think he's your day one starter on the right side. You talk about someone that is so strong at the point of attack. And when you think about what North Dakota State does, they dominate at the line of scrimmage. They dominate in the run game. And that's Dylan Radins. And when you think about what Tennessee wants to do and what they have done the last couple of years, it's the same thing. So it's like he's a plug-and-play guy. I even throw in my notes, you know, in pass pro, he anchors like a HBCU drum major. Like, you're going to walk him. You're going to try to bull rush him. He's going to keep, you know, absorbing. He's going to lean all the way back. He's not going to get bull rushed. So he's tremendous in that regard also. And, you know, when he takes those aggressive pass sets, it's almost like he's firing off the ball in the run game. He's good on the right side. I think he's a tremendous prospect, to be honest.
Do you think that where they picked him, you know, as far as that back end of the second round, is that really good value for them?
I do. He was my number 10 offensive tackle prospect. I had like an 81 grade on him. So that's a starter type grade. That's like a late first type grade. So, of course, I believe they got tremendous value. And when you think about what he does well in conjunction to what the Titans do well, it's the perfect fit.
So let's move on to the third round. And you know Elijah Molden is a guy that I really like. So we won't really get into him too much. But a lot of Titans fans, they're scratching their head about the Monty Rice pick. So kind of talk them off of that bridge that they're ready to jump off of in regards to Rice.
Well, I think what happens, they see Rice and they see, well, how is he different than David Long Jr.? Is he really going to play over Evans and Brown? You know, so I can understand a little bit of the trepidation, but he's kind of like David Long in that regard. He's got good speed and fluidity for the position. He shows up, you know, as a blitzer and his ability to cover in man. I mean, there was one time, I think when they played Alabama, you know, they ran, I want to say it was Waddle down the seam on one of those deep overalls. He had to carry that in zone. Mm-hmm. And he was, I would say, for a linebacker, set for set with him. So, you know, he closes well in the run game. He's an impactful tackler. And he won't miss many tackles in space, so he's good in that regard. So he gives you just good depth. And people have to realize when you're building through the draft, yeah, you're taking impact players, but you also want guys that can serve in sub packages that can be, you know, not too far off from your starters, that can step in and play quality minutes and give you a pathway to starting if you project them to do so, especially if you, let's say you have a guy at a position and you say, well, in 2 years, you're probably going to move on from him. Well, at least you have a guy that has a similar skill set, so you won't lose much when he steps in.
Well, that leads me right into my next question, because when you look at Jayon Brown, Rashawn Evans, these are two guys that are going to be free agents next year. They didn't pick up Evans, his fifth-year option, and then you got David Long there. Now Monty Rice is in the mix. Can you feasibly see a situation where the Titans next year have Jayon Brown or Rashawn Evans starting with Rice or Long?
Absolutely, and that's what the plan looks to be, because nowadays guys want to get paid like stars, and rightfully so. And so if you're Tennessee, you're thinking, well, maybe we can't keep both guys. We want to make sure we protect ourselves by having a guy that's going to be used to our system, used to our coaching, has some valuable game time minutes under his belt. So if we lose one of these two starters, at least we have a guy that we can trust to step in and, you know, and either take the reins and give us what we had with the previous guy, or at least be a placeholder until we find the right guy to come along in the draft. So it's just a way to project out forward in building your team and keeping your team consistent.
And we're talking to Emory Hunt, football game plan, as well as CBS NFL draft analyst, CBS Sports, that is. I want to just kind of follow up with that. So you're saying in the second round, Dylan Radins, instant starter, day one starter. Monty Rice, your more core special teamer, future starter?
Yeah, probably a core special teamer. A guy's going to see some you know minutes a game, some snaps a game, but you're kind of grooming him to take over.
Yeah.
For one of those guys that will eventually leave. I mean, remember, you got Deion Brown in the fifth round. So it's not like Monty Rice was someone that they just found and picked up. They actually have a plan for him, and he expects one of those guys, Brown or Evans, like you talked about, to be gone. So it's going to either be Long or Rice that's going to assume that role and take over.
So let's move to the fourth round. And I know you like Des Fitzpatrick. You saw a lot of the Senior Bowl reps, the one-on-ones, et cetera. I like him as well. What do the Titans get in Des Fitzpatrick? Why is that a pick that you put your stamp on?
Because he's a pro's pro already, man. And you know, talk about someone that's a very good route runner, has good athleticism, able to make those adjustments while the ball is in the air. He'll help his quarterback out, so you don't have to be the most accurate passer. He's going to give you a chance for the reception. His acceleration is where it needs to be. He explodes off the line. He threatens deep down the field, and that allows you then to open up those hips of a defensive back so you can snap that route off, come back toward the ball, toward the quarterback as well, and find reception. So, one, you can catch the football. So I already like that about your game. That's number one. And then you add in the nuance and the route running and how he's able to release off the line of scrimmage. I think there's a pathway for him to play inside or outside. So he gives you that flexibility across the receiver board. So, you know, when you think about someone like Fitzpatrick and what they lost in the offseason, and someone like Corey Davis, I see him kind of like being that Corey Davis-type player that can kind of find his way into the rotation, along with Brown, and I'm a big fan of Reynolds that they brought in from the Rams, too.
Yeah, since you mentioned Reynolds, let's talk about him. Because I remember him coming out in 17, and I'm like, yo, this dude, he could play, you know, or 16, was it? I think it was 16. I don't know. I get these years mixed up sometimes. But I remember him coming out of A&M. He averaged 17 yards per catch. And it just – he got to the Rams and Jared Goff, you know, did what Jared Goff does. And you didn't really get to see as much of that deep threat ability. But is that something you see with him, a guy who can stretch the field?
Yeah, he can get down the field. That's something he did really well at A&M. You know, he was able to sneak down the rail and make those acrobatic catches. And I thought he was going to have a chance to be, you know, a top-tier starter. And unfortunately, when you go to a team like the Rams' depth chart has always been stocked with talent at receiver. So your fourth guy could be a tremendous talent like Reynolds was, but he's your fourth guy.
Yeah.
And when you think about what they had on the roster and what they were, you know, what they were working with, not only just at receiver but also at tight end, there's not too many options or opportunities for him to get on the field and see those targets. But I think in Tennessee, he's going to get that opportunity and showcase that ability that he showed at Texas A&M, because you saw it in spurts when guys were getting injured with the Rams. He'd step in and step up and play well. And so now he gets an opportunity to showcase that in a more expanded role with Tennessee.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a solid year with the Titans, no doubt. Let's move on to some of the special team guys. And let's look at Brady Breeze, and that's a pick that, you know, the Titans made, obviously, to get he reminds me a lot of Chris Maragos. I'm not talking about just styles. Like, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about just a guy that's going to be in the league for a long time, right? You don't really want him on the field on defense, but he's a special teams demon.
Yeah, and he plays on all special teams units. So when you think about someone that's on, you know, the punt coverage team or the kick coverage team, that's a defensive position. So he fits right in there. Even on the back end, you can trust him in a split field look. You know, he got the quick and anticipatory skills to get over top and make a play. He got above average ball skills. So if he's not going to make the interception, he'll be in the mix to break the ball up. So he got good springs, good ability, good burst. But you like him more so as a core special team. And again, you're building out your special teams unit. That's one of the three aspects of a game or facets of a game. And all you have to do is win two of those, whether it's defense, special teams, offense, special teams, or offense, defense. Whichever two of the three that you can win, you're going to win most of your games. So I like how Tennessee was able to get some frontline starters, but also focus on special teams and strengthening that unit as well. Because you think about what they lost. You lose the core special teamer in the offseason in the kid from Holy Cross. You lose him, and so now you get a guy like Breeze that can step in and play on special teams. Racy McMath, another one, special teamer, that was outstanding in that regard at LSU. You bring him on. So you can see where their focus was. We got to get stronger on special teams, but also find some frontline starters that can help us in day one. They did that with Raiden, Farley, and Elijah Molden, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you're talking about Khalif Raymond from Holy Cross, a coach-type pupil.
Exactly. Right.
That's an inside joke, ladies and gentlemen. But
Coach Raymond.
Yeah. I told you that I didn't mention Farley as a guy that I wanted to talk about, but I mean we have some time, so let's round it out with Caleb Farley. I mean, this dude is a tremendous talent. I just wonder how much of that will be recovered. Sounds like he's going to be good to go, but just talking about him as a prospect, what did you see from some of the games that you watched from Farley?
Man, he is outstanding in the level of calm and confidence that he plays with. He's never panicked out there on the field. He's able to stay consistent all throughout the game, and he has elite ball skills. Mm-hmm. And that ball skills in terms of turning the ball over and ball awareness in terms of being in a position to make plays on the ball and always seems to make the play on the ball. And he got 29 pass breakups in his career, so he's able to always find a way to make plays. That's the type of player that you don't throw towards if you're a quarterback. So you got to find elsewhere to go with the football. He can lock up in man coverage. He's a former wide receiver, so he understands route concepts and how to run routes and how receivers will try to take advantage of defensive backs. So he applies that knowledge with his ability as a defensive back. It makes him a really good corner. He was my number one grade corner out of all the guys, and that's just health permitting. When he's out there on the field, that's the type of effort he puts out there. He's good in run support. He's a top-tier athlete. The footwork is where it needs to be. But you worry about the injuries like Boswell. He missed all of 2017 with an injury, part of 2019 with the injury, and we know about what just happened this whole draft cycle as well. So you wonder if that is all over with and if he can just play, you know, with a full bill of health. He's tightened up himself a tremendous corner.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's Emory Hunt, ladies and gentlemen. You can check him out at footballgameplan.com. We have a couple books together, too. You know, Football Love Story and What Did Football Teach Me. You could get those on footballgameplan.com/books. There are a bunch of other products on there. So, my man, I appreciate you coming on.
Always, man. I appreciate you. Thanks for taking the time.
For sure.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. That music is special request right there by our next guest. And this guy I've been wanting to get on for a long time, so I'm glad we're able to make this happen. Anytime you go to a game and you enjoy the experience, it is typically coming from our guest right here, the Senior Vice President, Chief Marketing and Revenue Officer, Gil Beverly for the Tennessee Titans. Gil, what's going on, man?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited. I know we've been talking about this for a minute. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think the song is fitting about getting the job done because that's pretty much all that you've done since you've gotten here. And I could say that just from what Titans fans have said to me, just about how much they enjoy going to games. So wanted to shout you out on that. And just for those who are listening, as far as some of the things that Gil does, you know, directing ticketing, marketing, corporate partnerships, digital communications, and community impact, which we're going to get into as well. Those are the areas of focus for him. So, Gil, just from the start, if you take a walk around Nissan Stadium, you see some trucks and some construction going on. So I have to ask you, what's up with the stadium?
Well, as you can imagine, on any given day with a facility of that nature, there's always something going on. But that right now that we're getting ready for an event with the Good Guys, which is an auto event. So it's not I know there's been a lot of rumblings about our renovation and the future of Nissan Stadium. And we recently swapped out the Nissan updated their logo. So we're up there swapping that out. People thought we were doing something crazy.
Yeah.
But really, it's just the what's what you see now is just the regular nature of day to day. We have an event coming, and so we're getting ready for that, and just your regular meeting. So the big stuff is still to come.
Okay, all right. That's comforting to know that, you know, it's not anything too drastic going on. But what about the fan experience? Because I mentioned how fans have said to me on social media that they're having a great time at the games. And obviously last year was a bit more difficult, but I think you guys still did an awesome job. So what's your measuring point? How do you go about trying to make sure that experience is such a great one for the fans?
Well, a lot of it's like all relationships. Like, we want to have a great relationship with our fans. And, you know, those of you that are fortunate to be in a happy marriage, you know, it starts with listening, right? You always got to listen, especially if you're the husband, right? We're constantly engaging our fans in communication, listening to what they say, their feedback, and trying our best to sort of put things out in the field that matches what people are looking for. And so some of the low-hanging fruit from when I joined was updating our music selection, diversifying that. You know, people were looking for more rituals and things that they can join in on. So the first down chant, you know, that kind of harkens back to the 300 movie was one. Last year, we released Get Loud, which is our touchdown song after we score, and people seem to resonate with that. And, you know, we're doing, you know, new things in terms of concessions, you know, really all aspects of, you know, the experience from when people come in the building through the time they leave. You know, we're constantly sort of looking at and trying to figure out, you know, how can we improve?
So are there going to be some expansions? You said concessions, so you're looking at tweaking some of the things with food that's available and those type of things?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things, going back to listening, that we've heard from our fans is that they would like to see more of the, you know, homegrown Nashville culinary talent reflected in Nissan Stadium.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't drop dimes or name names yet because we don't have any we don't have any contracts signed. But we're in discussions with a number of folks locally that people will be excited about to join us in Nissan Stadium and to bring home that Nashville cooking, hopefully for the 21 season.
Yeah, that is awesome. We're talking to Gil Beverly, Senior Vice President, Chief Marketing and Revenue Officer for the Titans. I want to kind of get into just connecting to the younger fans, right? Because typically when you look at the Titans and their fans, it's a bit of an older demographic, but how are you looking to kind of change that, right? To break that mold, to get the middle schoolers and the elementary kids, you know, those guys involved with being fans of the Titans?
Well, you know, it's a complicated and deep question, but, you know, we think in terms, what we've done recently, to your point, our average age of our fan is relatively high, right? And so we've talked about launching what we call Operation Get Younger. Like, we want to get younger in our fan base. And so, you know, for the younger kids, like the kids that are my kids' age, like, you know, 4 to 10, we just want them to be aware of us, right? We want them to know who the Titans are and that we're good. And so for that, you know, we've got in-school programs where we send TRAC to do educational type things. We have Take a Titan to School Tuesdays, mm-hmm. where, again, our guys go into the schools. Yeah, it's great. And it's just, you know, and honestly, like, you know, I love all of our guys, right? But it doesn't have to be Derrick Henry. A year ago, it was Parker Hesse went to one, and you would have thought, you know, he was Tom Brady, the way the school reacted. Like, they met him out, like, 100 kids outside the building, chanting Go Titans and all this and the other. And, you know, it's for a guy that was, you know, towards the bottom of the roster. And so it doesn't take a whole lot to make a big impact at that age. And then for the next group, the sort of teens and tweens, you know, we want to be their favorite team. And we want them to think of us as sort of an aspirational brand. And so, you know, it's more about speaking to those guys in their own language and through their own channels. So gaming, TikTok, we have a very active TikTok presence, mm-hmm. which, you know, I don't fully grasp. I'm out of the demo, but I'm told we're doing some good stuff there. Social media, and things of that nature, because they're starting to get aware of that. Everyone's doing it for the gram, right? So we, you know, we got some good stuff cooking there. And then when you get into the young adults, it's really more about being, you know, around town in Nashville, mm-hmm. you know, being in the spaces that they care about. So, you know, we're doing more watch party events. We've been doing what we call our pop-up shop, which is special clothes drops, which, you know, with gear that's targeted towards younger folks. And then we're doing things, you know, again, in different spaces, like art, like the big mural we did downtown. Now, anyone yeah. can enjoy that, but art's kind of a young people's game in this town. And so that was really to speak to that group. So a lot of what we do to reach the younger folks is outside of the building and not just on game day. But that being said, when you look at the upcoming renovation, a lot of what we're going to be doing is to create spaces that the younger folks are going to, you know, really trend towards. Because, you know, younger folks, they don't want to sit down in seats that don't move and just face forward and watch the game for 3-4 hours. They want to move around. They want to go to the bar. You know, they want to check in on the other games. They want to holler at somebody in the other section, whatever the case may be. And so we're going to create some, you know, different seating products and club spaces and things of that nature that are going to address all that.
So that, in a sense, is going to be just like a way to kind of modernize, Nissan Stadium. Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, for guys like you and me, Tron, like, it's kind of hard to relate to this. But, you know, in 2021, a lot of people come to a football game, but they don't want to watch the football game. You know, they want to hang out.
Yeah.
They want it to be a social experience, and they, you know, they want to, you know, eat, drink, and socialize outside. I mean, and that's cool. And we have to, you know, create a building, create programs, create spaces, create products that speak to that. And that's a big part of the modernization. And, you know, we're no different than anybody else. You're seeing that across the league,
yeah.
across sports, and, you know, frankly, even across different, you know, genres. Even concerts are like that. Like, people go to concerts, they're not even watching the performer, they're just hanging out. And so, you know, it's just a general trend that we're going to have to get up to speed with.
Yeah, and it's not just, like you said, it's not just football. I mean, you look at baseball games, they got to put nets up because people are looking at their phone instead of looking at the game, and a foul ball could bonk them in the head, but now these nets are keeping that from happening. So you're right on with there. I want to get into the community outreach part, and this is something that I will say. Let me say this, Gil. I've covered the 49ers, the Ravens, the Eagles, and now the Titans. And outside of the Ravens, this team, this organization that you guys have are the most involved with the community I've seen. And it's just been so impressive, right? Whether it be the $450,000 that was donated to various initiatives 2 years ago, right? And we look at the $315,000 that you guys in grants to youth football here in Tennessee. Why is that so important to you guys? Because you really do a lot. I mean, we talk about the tornadoes, right, and the relief. I mean, you guys are right there, boots to the ground, literally picking up things and cleaning up the community. It's astonishing.
Well, you know, first, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't just call out the leadership of Amy Adams Strunk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's a big believer in, you know, you support the community that supports you. And that you always are trying to do the right thing in general. And so, you know, if you know, whatever cliche you want to give, like, you have great power, great resources, you've got great responsibility. And so that kind of starts with her. And we, you know, following her lead, you know, Burke Nihill, our team president, you know, has adopted our new mission statement, which we've rolled out recently. And it's simply win, serve, and entertain. That's what we're trying to do. Like, at all times, anything that you're doing as a Titans employee should either be tied to winning, serving, or entertaining. And so service is right part of our mission. And I think part of the evolution of that mission was just, you know, sadly, we had a whole lot of opportunity to serve this last year because there were so many problems.
Yeah.
You know, starting with the tornado. Like, my life hasn't been the same since the tornado because, like, it just fundamentally changed who the franchise was. Because when we saw how – you know, people reacted to us and, you know, we did what we did and we brought material goods to folks. The people's, you know, it was unseasonably cold that week. And so we brought blankets and it was stuff that, you know, changed people's lives for that week.
But it was more than that. Like, the fact that the Tennessee Titans cared enough to be in their neighborhoods and to talk to them, listen to their stories, give them hugs pre-COVID, you know, that just made a ton of difference. And you could tell. And it was sort of like, you know, Burke and I looked at each other at the end of that. We're like, we have to keep doing this.
Yeah.
We have to continue to use this platform that we have as an NFL franchise in this town to create value and to drive it where it's needed. And then, you know, sadly, you know, that catastrophe was followed by COVID, which was followed by, you know, racial strife, which was followed by Christmas bombings and then the floods. And so it's just, there's always going, you know, sadly, there's always going to be these opportunities to jump in. And so we've decided we don't want to wait. You know, we want to be proactive. And so we're revitalizing our foundation to raise money for different causes. And, you know, like I said, we want to be there, you know, all the time and not just the next time, you know, there's a natural disaster.
Yeah, and while we're talking about community outreach and impact, you know, I got to shout out Tina Tuggle, excuse me, the VP of Community Impact, because she's right there too, like making, spearheading this and making sure these things happen as well. So it's like the team there is awesome, man. You guys, I really, really admire how much you're involved. That being said, not everyone has access to games, right? Not everyone can afford to take their family to games. So you mentioned making the guys a bit more accessible and doing things outside of the stadium. To your knowledge, are you guys going to get back to kind of like, I think it was the caravan or mobile that you guys used to do, the caravan, I think it was. Are you going to get back to that this year?
Not this year, Tron, because as you know, there's still a lot of detail work in terms of the, you know, with the Players Association and the league about appearances and protocols and such, as we're kind of, you know, hopefully getting to the tail end of all the impacts of COVID, right? So, you know, it's still unclear as exactly how things like public appearances tied to the team are going to be handled for this year or long term. So, you know, we're not having team organized events like that this summer. A lot of the players are still having their own camps, like Kevin Byard's having one pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, July 24th.
And then a lot of these guys are having them in their home markets and things, you know, where they grew up and all that. So they're taking on themselves, but there's still some work to do between the league and the Players Association to get an understanding of, you know, what the team activities might look like. And so we kind of have to respect that for now.
Understood. Definitely understood. I know training camp is something that the league, and I'm sure you guys are working on getting open, so we'll see how that rolls. It's just one of those things where you just kind of have to roll with the punches, and that's what we're all doing. So I appreciate the organization doing that. Last thing before I get you out of here, man, I have to ask, because, you know, you are like me, well-traveled, lived in multiple places, but now here in Nashville, I could kind of tell that you love this city the same way I do, probably even more. So I have to ask you, what do you love most about the city? What was it that really allowed you to just plant your roots here the way that you have?
Yeah, man, I'm only 2 years in, 1 year under COVID, but I'm a Nashvillian. I grew up in Chicago, spent a lot of time in New Jersey, but I love, this is my hometown as far as I'm concerned. I think it is a great cultural melting pot.
Yes.
In terms of just, you know, the musical history, like you go to NAMM, the African-American Music Museum, and just get a vibe for everything that's come through here. It's amazing. You know, the food scene is off the hook. The live music scene is off the hook. And, like, it's not just the country music, which, you know, isn't my jam necessarily. It's my wife's jam, so I listen to it. But it's everything, right? Like, I can go to Rudy's Jazz Bar and get a really cool jazz experience. There's R&B here and there. So it's just all the cultural experiences you want, except the people here are just so community-minded. You know, just the level of friendliness and acceptance of my family as we transition here has been outstanding. I'm just a big fan of this place, and, you know, I hope it doesn't change.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's funny you mentioned that, because when I got this job, when I got the job as the ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, I moved here. I accepted the job and moved here July 29th, 2018. I had never been here before. And I was not one that really went further south than Virginia. You know what I mean? So yeah, I was nervous, right? But this is nothing like what I've imagined the South would be like. So, you know, I want to take this opportunity just to say thank you to Nashville itself just for the way it accepted me, you know what I mean? And it's just exceeded all of my expectations, and I love this place. I'm right with you.
No doubt, man. Like, I'm with you. Like, I grew up in Chicago, and like, becoming a Southerner was not on my bingo card. but I am. Family loves it. I love it. You know, it helps. You know, we both have jobs that we love, which helps. But, no, this is a good place. And, you know, I hope to be here for a long time.
No doubt. So there you have it. Gil Beverly, the Senior Vice President, Chief Marketing and Revenue Officer of the Titans. As I said, you go to a game, you have a good time. Chances are the reason why is my man right here. So I appreciate you, Gil.
Thanks, brother. It's good to talk to you.
All right, always.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byer, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD as promised. We always had to get the coach's perspective, you know, because we like sharks, right? We like to go deep when it comes to this X and O thing. And who better to help us break down and talk about Dylan Radins than his position coach, who was at North Dakota State with him? He's now, just coincidentally, the offensive line coach at Vanderbilt right here in Nashville. We got offensive line coach A.J. Blazek. Coach, what's going on?
How we doing, Teron?
I am awesome, man. I appreciate you coming on. I hope you liked the little song, too, by Blur, man. I figured that'd be something to get you a little excited.
I was sitting here. My head was bobbing a little bit. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So let's kind of right off the bat, and it's something that I've been on record saying, I believe that North Dakota State prepares players for the league just as well, if not better, than a lot of these Power 5 schools, just because of the similarities to pro schemes. You've been in the program. You've coached. What is it about it that really gets these guys ready and able to make that jump to the next level?
Well, you know, Teron, I had to coach against them for a couple of years at an opposing school and always kind of wondered and thought the same thing. And then, you know, I was lucky enough. I played at Iowa, coached there with Coach Ferentz, and was at Rutgers for a while, and so I've been at the high level, and you get a chance to go to North Dakota State, and I'm telling you, I was so fired up to get an opportunity to go work with a good buddy of mine, who was the head coach, Matt Entz. And when he asked me to come, it was more of I was excited to go see what it was all about, the culture. It's a 60-year program in the making, and everybody sees the last 8 or 9 years because of the FCS. You know, then the Division II years, they – you know, ran the tables for a long time. I think in 60 years, there were 3 losing seasons. Mm. So the seat, I mean, really, and I agree with you, and I talked about it briefly, was the way that the program has developed. And, you know, their trade shift motion, they're still under center a little bit. They're still IDing, and it goes back, it's built from the line of scrimmage. And does that mean they only run the ball? Not at all. I mean, you saw Trey Lance, 30-some touchdowns, no interceptions. But it's built around the run game, the play action, the decoy, the setting up of sequencing of plays. And I think that's why so many of those guys are ready to step in and be ready early on in their career. Physically, they're growing just like every other 18 to 22-year-old. They just got to go against it a little bit. And it's much easier to catch up to the speed of the play than it is to learn a new game or learn a new style. And, you know, all 32 teams, they're more advanced than the IQ and the football scheme side of it, and that's what they still force guys to do up there at North Dakota State.
That's a really interesting and detailed description, and I appreciate you giving that. Now, from an offensive line perspective, right, and because that's your wheelhouse there, what is it about Dylan Radins? You know, you look at him and what he had to do at North Dakota State, and he's expected to be an early contributor. I mean, my guest I had on before you, Emory Hunt, who's an NFL draft analyst for Football Game Plan, he said Dylan is a day one starter. So what is it about that program? Are there similarities, which I believe is the case, to what the Titans do? What do you think will have Dylan ready to contribute early?
Well, I think the Titans, I mean, they're a perfect team for him because they're going to line up and they want to physically maul you and they want to get after you with Henry in the backfield. And the biggest thing I would say North Dakota State does, and you still see, you know, there's a handful, but not many programs, they're going to have a tight end and a fullback or two tight ends in the box or two tight ends and a fullback. And some of that the NFL is spreading out and opening up a little bit, but it's still what they're doing with the tight ends. You know, that's kind of, I think, the toughest thing to find in pro football is the tight ends that can line up in line, they can flex out. But the pictures that those create in the box, Dylan has seen that for his 4 years. And a lot of guys that come from a spread offense or just a tempo, they've not had to line up, point IDs, combo everything. It's so detailed. And that's just, you know, there's a reason. You know, Billy Turner with Green Bay, Zach Johnson's at Green Bay, Joe Hague's with Tampa Bay. Not only are they're good, they're playing in the NFL, they're with good organizations. And, you know, those are all guys that were linemen there. And so it's not just a coach, it's the culture. And you look at Dylan was a big-time defensive end recruit coming out of high school. And that's what he committed for at first. So, you know, he turned into the offensive lineman just because of recruiting numbers and excelled. And Connor Riley, his coach, recruited him. And, you know, I got to help coach him at the end of his career. And, it, you know, he's been on record saying that the village raises him. But if you get the right kids, and that's what Clark's trying to do here, and we're going to build at Vanderbilt, is to get the right kids that understand there's still development and they're still eager to develop when they get to college and put that work in. That's really the biggest difference. And why I think Dylan is a high draft pick. Dylan is all of the prognosticators are saying this and an early. Dylan's going in like he's earning everything. Yeah. He's not getting anything, and that's just how he's wired.
Yeah. We're talking to Vanderbilt offensive line coach A.J. Blazek, who actually coached Dylan Radins at North Dakota State. Coach, when it comes to approach to the game or just even being out there on the field, I know that's something you like to get inside the player's mind. So tell me, what goes on in Dylan's mind? Like, how is he as far as a thinker when it comes to football?
Well, I think thinker is the perfect word. He's a guy that understands kind of X's and O's and angles. And I mean, he's an engineer. Okay, he had an internship all through last year. He graduated. I mean, he's an engineering student. He's really smart with numbers and angles, and that's just something that comes natural to him. In his play, I've told every scout this when they called or anybody that asked, you know, he wants to understand everything about it. Mm. He wants to know the why. He wants to, whether it's a scheme or it's an opponent or it's a defensive front, he wants to know why it clicks that way, because then as it unfolds full speed, I mean, he plays fast. He's not some people, when they think a lot, they kind of get slowed down. If he understands a picture, he can really quickly process what are the one or two things that can happen here, so he can play lightning fast. And I think he's got the athletic tools, but some guys get hindered because they're thinking. He takes those tools and accelerates with them. That's the stuff he does really well from a mental standpoint.
Coach, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you, because, you know, sometimes you have guys who are analytical like Dylan apparently is, and that could slow them down. But you're saying that was never the case. Like, you never had to, you know, hey, man, stop thinking. Just relax and just go out and do what you have to do. Be that way.
Correct. And I mean, he was hungry. He was always, coach, what's a better way to do this? You know, here's stuff I've done in the past. How does it fit into what we're doing? He always wants to kind of seek to find the best way to do things and really break himself down a lot. He studies the heck out of himself.
That's awesome. And that's, you know, self-awareness and actualization is key for being able to, you know, ascend as an athlete or just period. So I'm glad you mentioned that. As far as his best attributes are concerned, obviously, the versatility is something that continues to come up. Would you say that's his best attribute? Or, because you have such a glowing endorsement of him, so I'm curious what you would say is the best.
Well, if you had to say pinpoint it, you know, I think his core strength is his best. He gets dinged a little bit for being a little bit lighter, or
yeah,
not, but he's not a 340-pound guy. man, but he, his core strength and his torque, and when he's blocking guys, if he gets slightly off an aiming point, he can correct himself. And yeah, these guys are going to be bigger and more athletic, but I think that's his athletic tools. He's never just relied on those. I think some guys that are super athletic just are like, hey, I got it. He really focuses on the physical piece, and lets the athletic piece kind of just do its thing.
What was his work ethic like?
And that's where the culture, you mentioned North Dakota State earlier, his work ethic, he'll go as long as the day is. And whether that's conditioning, whether that's summer, whether that's player run stuff, whether that's training, nutrition. I mean, the guy goes to bed at night at like 8:30 because he's an early morning riser. It's just, he's been that way since I've known him. You know, he's wired that way. But no, his work ethic is awesome. And I think that he'll be the first one to tell you that he's had that. But I think North Dakota State just brings that out of every kid that goes up there. And like I said, that's the fun thing for me, is that's everything Clark's preaching here at Vanderbilt University right now is a lot of the same stuff.
That's awesome. And just to balance it out, areas for improvement, right? I don't ever like to say weaknesses, because I just think that's the wrong way to approach it. But what would you say are some areas for improvement with Dylan Radins?
Well, I think the obvious one is he just, you know, catching up with the speed of the game that I mentioned earlier. Because just like going from high school to college, it's a lot faster. Well, college to pros, it's a lot faster. Mm-hmm. You know, and he didn't see a guy every week. He saw a couple guys that can come off the edge, and he'll see on Sundays, but he didn't see them week in and week out. And he'll get that through practice and reps and one-on-ones. And so once he catches up to the speed of the game, you know, we've talked three or four times. We've had dinner once, and it's, he loves the football IQ of it. And it's a lot of the same stuff, but it's new terms, it's new terminology. And so for him really to get that wired out, the sooner the better. And so he's sorting through those things right now.
That's awesome. I appreciate your input on Dylan Radins. Let's talk about Vanderbilt just briefly here. You're coming in. This is a program that is in need of repair. So what's the plan there for you guys?
Well, I'll tell you this. In leadership from the top down, from Chancellor to our athletic director, Candace Lee, to Clark. And Clark and I have crossed paths through our careers, but have never connected a lot. When I got a chance to talk with him, our offensive coordinator, David Ryan, and I played together in college. I knew of a lot of the staff members. You know, Clark is building it. I think we have four football alum that are on our staff that touch our players every day and are, you know, in constant contact with the guys in our program. And, you know, the thing for me is Clark is doing it the right way. He's not trying to Band-Aid it or quick fix it or, you know, dive into the 55 transfer portal. It is about, you know, there's kids here and the previous staff, they brought in great kids. And it's just a confidence has to be instilled, but that starts, you know, you got to go back and earn that confidence. And so Brandon Horrigan, our strength coach, and what he's done this spring really to handle the winter, just went back to a very disciplined, you know, regimented approach from the weight room to what time we're here, how we're preparing for practice, and all that. So really the core fundamentals is what we want to instill. And then we're going to keep it simple, and we're going to build it as we have success on that. And, you know, there's no doubt in Clark's mind, in ours as a staff, it's been awesome that it's about, you know, we want, and I hear him say it every day, we want to produce our country's next great leaders, and football's an avenue to do that. But from the football standpoint is we've got kids that want to be good on the field too. And that's, we just got to continue to build it and pour into these young men that are in our program, and they're excited as heck. I mean, when they left for their break, they're chomping at the bit to come back in 2 weeks, and they're, I think, feeding off the energy a little bit too. And Clark being from here gives them someone to believe in, and he's done it. You know, he's been here, he's been in their shoes, and he knows what's good, bad, and indifferent, and what needs to be corrected, and that's all the stuff that he's really embracing as a head football coach.
Is that something that you've been able to kind of really – pull out of your pocket is something like, man, I really got to get this guy to understand what it is we're doing here. Having been a player before, I always like to ask that of coaches who have played the game before. Do you feel like, maybe not an advantage, but just like something that you could go to?
Yeah, I think it's really big. And, you know, everybody looked at this, you know, COVID as a downturn, and it was tough to teach. And, you just, if you embrace it the right way, you know, it was to our advantage. It created some new ways for us to learn and educate our kids. You know, I went to Iowa with Coach Ferentz, replacing Hayden Fry. The last couple years had been a little rough. You know, we came in and made some change. So as a player, I went through that, stayed on there as an assistant coach, and 4 years later, you're in the Orange Bowl playing USC to be number three or four in the country. And, you know, Clark's vision is so similar to what I saw Kirk build in a developmental program and the kind of guys we're going to recruit, the culture that is that is going to be driven here, and you know, the empowerment of our kids. That's the biggest thing. And then I think from an example standpoint, teaching our young men is, you know, using that Zoom, using some of those resources that we had to use to pull some of my ex-players in. You know, North Dakota State's the only place I've ever gone that was rolling when you got there. You know, Western Illinois, Rutgers, and some of them you overcome it. Some of them you learn along the way. But to bring guys in that have been in their shoes, that are super successful now, Jonah Jackson with the Lions, Zach Johnson at Green Bay, Kamal Seymour in Oakland, having those guys that have played for me jump on and say, hey, now, here's how it's going to be. Coach is going to be hard on you. Coach is going to demand a lot. It's not me saying it to them. It's guys that have done it and have gone through the process of development and then have come out on the other end. And personally, it's worked out really well for them.
I don't know how, Elijah, you could hear this and not be excited about Vanderbilt football coming up. I'll tell you this, Coach. My guy, Jordan Matthews, as we chatted about before you got on, worked with the receivers a bit, and he invited me to the spring game. And I went and saw that, and you pair that with just the energy that you bring. I can't wait to watch some Vanderbilt football. In fact, I'm going to be submitting my name for some credentials at multiple games this year, that's for sure.
Hey, if you're with Jordan, you already got the credentials.
Yeah, right.
That's Vanderbilt.
Yeah, that's
with Jordan every day was to make sure and challenge him on some energy and make sure he was excited when he showed up. You know, that's really hard to get that energy out of Jordan.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Quite the opposite. But, hey, Coach, I appreciate you coming on. I'm definitely we got to catch up, man. I would definitely like to meet you in person, man, because, like I said, I love the energy just over the microphone, and I could imagine the presence would be awesome, man. So hopefully we could definitely do that.
Teron, I'm looking forward to it. We've loved Nashville in the couple months we've been here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate you.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right.